Brian.
And I'm Reggie.
And this is R&B Talks. I'm sorry, guys. Reggie is flopping his Twizzler. Yeah, that sounds weird.
It is, but that's what I'm doing.
Reggie?
Hi.
How are you doing?
Balls, bro. Here we are.
Well, you know how it is. Reggie is not in his most primal, perfect state. But that's okay, because we're going to give this a shot, aren't we, Reggie?
I have Twizzlers.
He has Twizzlers, so it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay because of the Twizzlers.
Now, so anybody who's struggling with anxiety, I totally take back all the stupid, ignorant shit I've said. It's legit.
It is. It is.
That has been a consequence of the GLP-1 for me. So I'm dealing with that, and it's insane, and I feel like I'm going to snap at any moment. So,
well, here's the thing, dude. We live in an anxiety-riddled world. You just blend in.
But that's a problem. I don't want to.
I know. I know. Trust me, man. As somebody who suffered anxiety for a very long time, it is, again, I describe it, it's like you're having a very mild panic attack 24/7.
All right, yeah, it wakes me up.
Yeah, and you're thinking about the weirdest, like most ridiculous stuff you wouldn't normally think about.
And just like, what? And it's like intense.
Yeah.
Like these intense thoughts. You're like, no. I'm like telling myself, what are you, what?
And then you still think them.
Yeah, and it's still going on. Why? What's wrong with you?
You know how it is, man. It's just a, you'll get through it, man. You'll get through it.
I get it, but I'm just, for a guy who doesn't ever and has never dealt with anything like that, it's completely altering. It just wrecked my world, man, because I can't enjoy anything.
You look like you're enjoying the Twizzlers.
It's really just keeping me occupied at the moment, man. I mean, seriously, like, it's just like, you know, there's, we watched, watching a show or something. It just, you know, you're just, it's like you're distracted all the time by nothing.
Yeah. Your mind keeps sending out distractions that you don't want.
Yeah. And like I try to read or something. And it's just like, you know, it's just, it's hard. I don't know. I'm so struggling, man. And so this will be awesome. I'm sure I will speak a lot of wisdom.
I know. Right on. Well, we are talking about today some pretty cool kind of stuff. You know, I like it. I like our subject matter today. Talking about, you know, beyond the pews, man. Men's role in church life.
Yeah. I chose this one just because I'm like, I'm just starting to get back into service-oriented stuff.
Yep.
And it's funny how if you, it's kind of the same thing everywhere, man. And I think a lot of this stuff comes from my experiences, but other men's too. That's how I put this together. Was because you think, well, maybe it's just this church, or maybe it's just this thing, or what that. But really, it's not. This is pretty much a vast problem, I would say.
It affects the entirety of the Western church, period.
Especially American church.
Yeah. Especially American churches. Yeah.
But really it's just about, you know, why men are kind of disengaging and why they're not really fully in and just sitting in, if they are sitting in pews, you know?
Well, I think part of this too, man, is it's a symptomatic of men in general in the last 25 years too. I mean, men are disengaging in church, and it's kind of freaky and crazy and weird to watch, but men are disengaging in general. I mean, if you think about the broad spectrum of men now and what's happening, men are disengaging from relationships. They're disengaging from marriage. They're disengaging from the church. They're disengaging from, you know, participating in what would otherwise be known as masculine activities. They're just disengaging in general. And people don't realize how dangerous that is, man, because it is through a incessant and absolutely intentional attack on masculinity that this is happening, and it's now bled into the church, which is the worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's plus the fact is that, you know, it's we get told all the time. Well, this is part of why we started this show. The whole rhetoric behind this quote unquote toxic masculinity that doesn't exist. And there is a level of masculinity that's kind of unhealthy, but to call something toxic is a little absurd.
The problem is I don't think there's toxic masculinity and toxic femininity. I think there's just toxic people like that. I think we talked about this way back when we first started, that I just think that there's, it's just in a general sense, there's just toxic people. And for some reason in this godforsaken society that we live in, golly, we have to label everything. We can't just call it what it is. You're a toxic person, male, female, doesn't matter. It's got to be, well, you're a toxic masculine. No, you're just toxic. Like it, but there's also parameters of toxic behavior, right? Like, because a man wants to protect his family and provide doesn't make him toxically masculine. If he dominates and verbally and mentally and physically abuses his family, that's just a toxic guy. That's not a toxically masculine guy. That's just a toxic person. So I think the part of it is this, we've lost, it's like everything else, man. The divination and the meaning to words has just disappeared. And now everything is just whatever we label it, right? Yep. That wears me out even more. And it's even in the church. Like, you'll go to the church and you're in the church talking and you're like, well, is there a men's group? Well, we have a group of people that meet. They're not really a men's. Why are you afraid to call it a men's group? It's just a group of guys that get together and support each other and talk about the Bible and God and our relationships and support each other and lift each other up. It shouldn't be a difficult thing to talk about that, right? Like, it shouldn't be, but, you know, tell me, when did you first notice, Reggie, men were disengaging in church? When was it started to become prominent to you?
From even when I came back to faith, dude. But I mean, you're talking 16 years ago, dude.
Because
like,
going on.
If you go to, well, I give an example. So what can I give an example? I mean, just at one church or another, like you'll have a service and there's a disproportionate amount of men in the congregation or something. There's one example, right, where I noticed that at one church. Another one where maybe there was, looked like healthy families and stuff were there, but whenever there were service opportunities or group meetings or something, there would be like zero guys show up, you know, maybe one or two, right? Yeah. A lot, and even at some of the bigger churches and stuff, it's just like, you know, they just plop down and be like, come to church on Sunday, and then that's all they do.
Okay.
Period. Right?
Yeah.
That's not helping anybody. I mean,
well, it's like, you know, serving and not connecting is a problem. If you're serving out of some weird feeling of obligation to the actual ceremony itself, part of service is to connect with people and give them spiritual guidance, right? That's part of what service is. But what I've noticed is there's a lot of people, and I noticed this about 10 years ago, that show up to church and they'll do communion and they'll work the coffee bar, but they don't talk. They don't engage. It's just, here's your coffee. Here's your donut. Here's your communion cup. And they'll smile at you, but they don't really say anything to you. I noticed, you know, and as jacked up as my grandfather's church was, the men were mostly responsible for the outreach, you know, and they would go out and get into the community and get to know people and serve and, You know, I remember my grandfather, he just used to have about once a month, he would just have a dinner at the house and he would just invite everybody from the church. And he was not a social dude, but he was social in that group, talking to the ladies in there, asking if they need anything, the widowers and the older women, and, you know, getting people connected and talking to people about what was going on. You don't see that anymore. But part of that is what we talked about, the loss of living life together, right, as a community within the church. So, you know, so why does it happen, Reggie? Why does it happen?
Well, there's a lot of I think a lot of it is the culture that's moved to a constant, you know, you're not needed. You're not special. You're not anything. Everybody else can do the same thing you can. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing, nothing. I'd say that's a big one, you know, just because why would you? I mean, it's the same thing. Like I was seeing a couple of like social media, you know, things where it would be like this person caught this dude on like a subway and was like, didn't give up his seat for this girl or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, well, what do you expect if you keep hounding on all the guys about how the women are just as powerful as you are and they don't need you and all this stuff? Then why would you? You
know? That's true. I mean, it's very true.
Why also would the man want to get up and do anything in particular? He's just going to feel like everybody else. So there's no, like, not that I'm saying a hierarchy, but there's no position for him to take up the mantle of what a man is supposed to be. They just want to take that all away.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true. Well, great example is I don't want to call it like a feud because it wasn't really a feud, but when you as you would call the spinsters, I would say that their reaction to you was a severe lack of any masculine imprint in their lives.
Right.
Like a severe lack of any masculine imprint in their lives.
And the thing is, for a real guy who's not caught up in all that nonsense, you must understand that means nothing. Like, yeah, you know, they have no power over you, period. Yeah. So what, I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what happens when it's real, because then, you know, well, fine.
Well, and people, you know, my grandfather always told me, if you got something to be defensive about, you probably did something wrong.
Huh.
Well, if you're getting that defensive over your position, you probably have a reason to be defensive. Yeah, right. I mean, so
being judgmental, there you go. The other thing too, is how the church has been too. I want to, you know, we've talked about this, I think, a little bit. I don't remember when, but you know, the church service is really emotional. It's really not geared for a masculine thought pattern.
Yeah.
Really, it's really that. Now, you need both, is what I'm saying. You can't have just like a full on factual versus emotional thing, and there's a balance for sure.
Yeah.
But like, it's full on, you know, it veers mostly towards the emotional side for what the Western church has gone to. The service is all about how they can manipulate your emotions.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's not conducive to having to enticing men to participate and like engage either. So,
well, I think part of this too is not, you know, I hear a lot of people go, well, men are getting lazy. I don't think that's true either. I think that kind of like a dog, and I don't mean to compare men to dogs, but this is really the only example I can draw at this point. Kind of like a dog. If you tell a dog it's a bad dog enough times, it's going to be a lazy dog. If you tell a man enough times, I don't need you. You're not in charge about it. They're eventually just going to lay down. They're just going to lay down their sword, man. Like, and that's, I think that's the real shame is, you know, if you go into the Bible, it says when Eve is made that I am going to make a helper. Doesn't say I'm going to make a slave. Doesn't say I'm going to make a servant. It says I'm going to make a helper, a helpmate for you. And that is a sacred role bestowed by God, right? That's not something to take lightly, right? And he bestowed that on women and in a support role to help raise men up so we can continue to be strong even when the times when it's heavy and it's hard, yeah, and it's too much, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, dude, I love this because it ties into almost everything we've ever talked about. You know, I think the beginning of all that, and especially in the church, was feminism. You know, I'm going to, we don't need you. We can do this. We can do that. Okay. Well, then why aren't you doing it? You know, Jordan Peterson had a famous debate with a British author in which she was like, well, you know, why aren't, and he said, okay, let's address it. Right. Why aren't, if women are capable and we're talking about an even percentage split, why aren't there as many women bricklayers? Why aren't there as many women ministers? Why aren't there as many, you know, because there are certain roles that men are good at and certain things that women are good at. It's not a bad thing. Nobody's telling you you're bad because you're good at it, but there's these roles that are built for the separation of the two, but they're also meant to help support the natural state of the two. Right. And we're getting into this thing where, you know, something I've noticed over the last few weeks is I've kind of been watching the world go around and lose its mind is we have become an anti-natural existence. Everybody wants to rail against the natural, and they so badly want to insert their own dominance that they're willing to go against what's natural.
Sure. But
what's natural is what's meant to be, right? Men are naturally masculine. We're naturally protective. We naturally want to work harder. We naturally want to provide. Women naturally want to, you know, raise families and have children. Not that they don't want to work. My wife works full time, but she still does an amazing job at raising my kids, right? So there's this railing against the natural. And I think you see it. I think it's actually hyper reflective in the church. And the reason I say that is when you look at the way the situation unfolds, the church is the place where the natural should exist. The will of God is to exist. Well, when you have people within the church going against the will of God, that's a hyper reflection of fighting the natural, right? Kind of got off on a side thing there. Sorry, man. I know I got off on a tangent, but
that's okay.
But I felt the need.
The key there, though, is that for thousands of years, we've had, you know, established gender roles and good or bad in some cases, but we've functioned and grown as a civilization with those roles. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is really new as far as the contradiction to gender having anything to do with all that and a couple of different things. Right. So yes, there's not, it is a railing against what's natural. And I think that's what people have said. If you find, I don't know, academics or something, they'll be like, well, it's we've evolved, we're more civilized now, we're this, we're that. But you can't erase nature. I mean, that's what it doesn't matter what there's a whole bunch of things you're trying to do with that. But yeah, I digress. But that's the root of it, dude, is that, you know, they're again, when it hits the fan, what's going to happen? It doesn't matter what you think you are, it will become evident as to whose role is what. Mm-hmm. It will not matter. If you scrape all of the nonsense away, what is left is what is.
Yeah.
And that's as simple as that.
Well, I think, you know, some of the stuff that's in our outline, I love, and with talks about the feminization of the language inside the church, right? Talks about, you know, the bride of Christ and talks, you know, and it, you know, worship and flowery decorations and all these things. And not to say that you want to walk into like a cold steel building and hang out, but, you know, I like the heat to be on in the winter and the air conditioning in the summer and all those things. But, you know, you had a quote in here, man. And when I read this, when I went over this outline and I read this, it was like the gong in the back of my head, man. It's by John Eldridge. It's Wild at Heart. And it says, deep in his heart, every man longs for a battle to fight, an adventure to live, and a beauty to rescue. Most men don't need louder sermons. They need a reason to fight again. Guys, I'm going to give you a reason to fight again. They're going after our kids. They're going after our security. They're going after our, you know, our lineage and our heritage and our faith and our spirituality. There's your reason to fight again, right? You know, if I was to give any man a piece of advice right now who was in the church and was struggling with the strength of his faith, my advice would be unapologetic. Be unapologetic for what you believe, man. What are they going to do to you? Right?
Yeah.
They're going to make fun of you. They're going to say, no. Ooh, I don't like you. That's okay. You know?
I mean, but there are still, there are still places to be a, that welcome a Christ-like man.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not, it's not like these places are gone and you can still find these. I mean, even in churches, there's some churches who are realizing what this means, and they're trying to turn it around.
Well, you know,
they are.
Again, I get, you know, as much hell as I give the Catholic sometimes, and don't get me wrong, I have a lot of people I work with are Catholic, and they're great people, and I don't have an issue with that. They have remained very good at defined roles. They have remained very good at the expectation of the husband's role and the wife's role within the marriage. They have very strongly held to those things, even through the more liberal Pope that came in and did that stuff. They still held to those roles for the most part, which I found was a very powerful example, right? Where in the Western church, this feminism movement, this especially in the American church, of, well, we need female pastors, and we need first of all, a female pastor is not going to relate to a man. It's just not. A man is on a different path spiritually. We worship the same God, but as we have separate roles within God, we have separate paths within God, men and women, right? So there's a dictum in the Bible that specifically says that men are to be in pastoral roles for a reason.
Yep.
Right. It's just what God put in place for us to follow. Right.
Yep.
You know, I love what Vadi said when he said, the church doesn't need to be arguing about the roles of men and women in the church. We need to be going by the Bible and what the Bible says about pastors and pastoral roles in the church. And we need to be loud, proud, and preach about that without any regret. And there are roles that women have within the church. And if you look at the way the church is built, essentially those roles mirror the marriage, right? You know, if you look at the way, you know, when my sons want them to do something hard, they come to me. When they need softness, they go to their mom, right?
Sure.
And it's not to say that I don't love my sons. I do. But I know that I have a specific role in their existence, and I have to play that role and do the things that God put me in place to do. So, but I think it's mirrored within the church, right? You look at, you know, the women in the church who get together and care for others, the disenfranchised and the widowers and the people who have had loss and all those things within the church. And it's not that men don't do that either. You were very, very good at hanging out with me when my eyeball was falling out and all that stuff and making sure I was okay. But we do that a little differently.
Yeah.
You and I can sit in a room silent for an hour and not say a word and we're okay. Right. So I think, you know, one of the things that is in this, and I really liked it, that I think would help lead us out of this is this third point, which is men are hungry for purpose, not just programs. How many men's breakfasts have you been to where you go in, everybody eats silently, the dude gets up front, talks for about 20 minutes, everybody prays, and everybody goes home? That's not what it's meant to be, man. We're meant to be connected, right? We're meant to connect to each other and spend that time lifting each other up. And we don't just want, I don't, now this may be a age thing, but I don't want to be entertained anymore in the church. I want to be challenged. I want to be mentally, spiritually, and emotionally challenged within the church.
But see, this is where, so for me, worship is a hot button, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to here. I don't mind an entertainment factor in a worship service.
Yeah.
But it needs to be purpose driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
For sure.
So there's a couple, this is both, this brings back to the other point and this one too. You know, worship has to it has to be extremely intentional, yeah. Right? And there's no doubt about it. There has to be a distinct, definitive purpose for worship, and that is to lead people to Christ, yeah. Not anything else. There's nothing else. That if there's anything that's derivative of that, it's not.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
The other thing, though, is that what a lot of our modern contemporary worship stuff is, though, is very feminine.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a struggle a lot of times to like get into modern contemporary Christian music because it's a lot of – it's the same thing. It goes to how the words they use, how they sing about it, and all that kind of stuff. It just gets like, you know – it's just flowery and you know, ooey gooey. And that doesn't help men engage or hunger to be not instead of just entertained, but like, you know, purpose.
Okay.
Which worship should do both. Worship should be like help you align your conduit to like open yourself up to the message of what God's going to tell you.
Okay.
And so he's got a purpose for everybody.
Yeah.
You're not going to find it, though, if you get wrapped up in some ooey-gooey worship songs.
Well, so, you know, something else that I've noticed, and I don't know, you may or may not have noticed this, but this generational divide within the church, men in the church. The older men are over here, and the younger men are over here, and there is nothing betwixt the two shall happen, right? And I think that is a shame because generationally, I invite people into my life regardless of where their generation is because I want to share wisdom and have wisdom shared with me. So I don't care who you are,
yep.
Right? And within the church, generationally, that's how we pass down the wisdom within the church, wisdom on how to worship, wisdom on what it is to serve and, you know, and do those things. And I think that, have you noticed that there's like just this huge like wedge driven between young men and it's even like kids, people my age, and then people in the older generation, there's wedges between all of them.
Yeah. Well, what's okay. Especially during the service too, because there's a difference in how you react and participate in the service between some people. And this goes actually not even, it's not even cultural. I should say there's a lot of cultural aspects to this. It's not just generational.
I would agree with that.
Right. Because where there may be in being a more urban environment, it's a more lively type of engagement. Maybe depends on where you're at. Then if you go out in the country somewhere in a more rural setting where it's maybe a lot more subdued, mm-hmm. especially from the men.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So there's a lot of aspects to that. I mean, it's not just generational either. Now, how do you bridge those things? And I think that's where it becomes being unbothered by anybody's worshipful, I don't know. How would you say it? How they participate in a worship yeah. setting, right?
Yeah.
Who it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Worship means something different to all of us.
And you can react however you want. Mm-hmm. I'm personally not one of those people who sit in the service. I don't sing. I'm not a singer. I don't like to do that. That's not my thing. I don't feel the need to do that. Yeah. I know that there, look, I'm not going to get an argument about that being scriptural or anything. I'm just not going there. I don't dance and flail around and arms go here and there. I really don't. I just like to sit there and meditate. On the words and the and the music and stuff to try to just internalize as much of it as I can. I've been in places that I felt differently, and that's what I guess that's where I was going. Like, it's just all about how I'm feeling at the moment. But I guess I don't go into the worship setting with a particular purpose of doing certain movements. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just all about what I'm feeling at the moment. Anyway, so I would say that generationally, though, I think you're going to – it's not during the worship service where you're gonna do anything generationally, like solve that problem. It's outside of that service. The more you have people – well, we're talking men. The more we have men working together from old and young, they're working together to do certain things and not just sit in a pew. That's what will – bridge this gap. You won't have that anymore, but it goes farther than just in the worship service.
Well, it's something popped in my head while you were saying that. A word popped into my head and it just, my mind just took off. Formulaic. Yeah. I think my biggest issue with church services is they've become entirely too formulaic. Why do we have, okay, everybody come in, shake hands, sit down. Here's the, you know, the benediction. Okay, we're going to sing three songs. Okay, then we're going to have a prayer. And then we're going to sing one more song. And then we're going to have a service. The minister's going to come up and preach. And then we're going to sing one more song and then you can go home. Dude, I'm sorry, but I'm not the guy that I want to grind away at the same thing every day. Like I have to be challenged in different ways. So if you put me in a service where I've got to watch, I don't care how many times you change the song. I don't care if it's just the blah, 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 go home. I'm done after 2 weeks. Like, that's why I go to Sunday school, but I don't go to service. And it has nothing to do with the minister at our church. Amazing guy. Really like him. Just, I have this, we've talked about this. I'm at this stage in my life where I am a sponge and I'm absorbing and I'm challenging myself. And that ain't challenging me spiritually to sit now. Have I been in sermons and somebody say something? I'll be like, dang, man, I never thought about it that way. Yeah, for sure. Right. That happens all the time. I was listening to a sermon today and you know, he said something in that sermon. And it just blew the back of my head off, man. I was like, couldn't believe it, that I hadn't seen that myself. But it's this formulaic. And I think that's what kills men too, is this, our spirits are not formulaic. Our faith is not formulaic, right? Everybody's path to God was something different. Right. And I think that kills the masculine spirit as well. You know, there's some key phrases I look at in here in defining masculinity within the church. You know, it does swing between two extremes, right? It's toxically masculine or their spiritual armor. You know, passive, quiet, soft masculinity that fears strength or challenge. What's missing? You know, strong but gentle, servant-hearted but bold, emotionally aware but anchored in truth. Those are the way. When I say masculine to somebody, I'm not saying dominance. That's not what the word masculine means. So, you know, you put this, dude, you and your outlines, you make me sit and think all the time. My brain is just doing this.
You're welcome.
But it says Jesus wept. He also flipped tables. That's manhood.
Yep.
And I think you couldn't have coined it better with that, right? Like he was the ultimate symbol of masculinity,
yep.
Right? I'm going to love you all, but I'm also not going to pull punches. Like if you're wrong, you're wrong. Right. That's the big thing.
The point being is like there is a formula here. that's what really needed to be understood. It's not that you have to be this exact thing, but like when we're trying to follow Christ as Christian men, then he is the example we should look to for everything we do, including being a man.
Yeah.
So you can't discount one thing he does and what he's done in the Bible and just completely nail that down to just Jesus's love, because that's not what his purpose was.
No. No, he was not sent here to teach us how to love.
No, he was not.
He was sent here to save our lives and show us what sacrifice was.
He was a kingdom bringer. He brought the kingdom of heaven to earth, okay, if you want to think about it that way. And it's not – yes, Jesus is – Like he does love, and it's not like that isn't part of who he is. But to nail it down, this is what the progressive church does: is they scrape off all the other stuff and just leave it with that, right?
Yeah.
And that leaves you with a non-authentic vision of what Christ really was. Well,
it leaves you with the squeaky clean, and it wasn't always squeaky clean.
No, I mean, you know, there's a reason why he scoffed at his disciples. He did not shy away from anything there. I mean, it's clear from the text that when a disciple would say something or whatever that he didn't agree with, he made that known.
Yeah.
He didn't shy away from that. He wasn't like all rainbows and cupcakes when it came to this. No, he didn't. He was pointed.
Yeah.
It was clear. You know, flipping the tables. Yeah, when things got – when it was like in his house or, you know, no. He wasn't having any of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and then at the other side, he did. He was like, you know, he showed emotion. He showed like how he cared and loved for his people. Yeah. And I mean, so yeah, there's two sides of the coin here. But it isn't just this, you know, passive, non-action-oriented – man, yeah. It's not, it's, yeah. It's the opposite of that. So when we're in church and we're just being fed this soft stuff,
it goes against our nature.
Why wouldn't we want to be engaged with this, like, kind of like thing where we're saying, man, that's just not, that's awful.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not like we need more manly. Yeah. Is really what I boiled down to, but not like, not some culturally defined sense of what man is. It's really about being a whole Christ-centered man.
Yeah.
We need more of those, right?
Yeah.
And those help not just the peers, but the older and the younger. That's what a Christ-centered man will do, is look for those things. How can they influence the younger people in the church? How can they help families get stronger? How can they help the community get stronger? Where can they help the widow, like you said, widowers and stuff like that? Where are they at? That's what you need.
Well, to feed off that, what can we do to call men back into the church, man?
You got to have a way to define and become more conducive to a masculine environment. I'm not saying change the services up right now and all that stuff, but you do need a place that is conducive to men being men, right? Mm-hmm. That means able to talk about real life problems, able to not just be fed emotional drivel of this nature or that, but it's, you know, It's got to go beyond, like you said, it's got to go beyond the breakfasts, right? It's got to go into something that is truly a brotherhood of some sort that's engaging, that helps men grow together as men. There's one thing.
Spiritually formative connections, right?
Yeah.
Spaces for real life and vulnerable spirituality, right? Like, at the end of the day, regardless of masculine or feminine, we're built to worship. We're built to reach out to God. We're built to connect to Him. And that's one of the things that I think the church is really starving for with men, is real life connection that helps men understand how to apply biblical principles into their everyday existence. We're so busy being alphas that we don't realize that we're missing feeding a part of ourselves, which is that spiritual you know, growth, you know, giving men real responsibility. Real responsibility. Okay, so I'm not going to say that because that would sound, I'm going to say it, that would sound dickish and I don't want to say that. But, you know, just because you serve communion doesn't mean you have anything heavy going on. You gave a cracker and some wine. How about you go out in the world and, you know, make an impact in the name of Christ, right? Do something heavy, you know, preach the full spectrum of manhood. I have noticed that as well. A lot of ministers stay away from the masculine side of what Christ calls us to keep the message soft and palatable. Stop it. Christ built us how he built us.
I mean, the thing I did appreciate on Father's Day was the sermon I heard from Pastor Pete. He used Abraham as an example of manhood and how that was and all that kind of stuff. It was really good, actually. It was better than what you typically hear sometimes on that stuff. But I mean, it's important because you do need to have this being preached and aligned with the church leadership. So it needs to be a consensus among the church leadership of what the manly. Now, honestly, this really should be no surprise. Really, I mean, like, if anything, your church leadership should be completely and totally bought into the biblical, theological, Christ-like definitions of what a man and a woman are, right? I mean, that should be a kind of a no-brainer thing here.
Yeah, shouldn't be hard to define.
No. Well, if you go by the world, it's very hard to define. But if you go by scripture and by what Jesus and who he was, it's not. And that should be from the pulpit. And from the elders and from, you know, any of the leaders should have that. That should be an alignment that does not waver.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, And then, you know, besides that, the leader, this is the other thing that bothers me. Like, I can't deal with, not can't. It really bothers me a little bit, I should say. Not can't deal with. That's not really true. I know I'm all over the place, bro.
You can't, but you don't want to.
No, what I'm saying is that preacher that goes up every Sunday and has a cry fest.
Yeah, dude, that wears me out. That exhausts me. That's so tiresome. Well, it's doing two things, in my opinion. Number one, dude, seek counseling, right? Something's off. If you got to cry constantly when you're preaching. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, if you're in a deep sermon and you're really, I mean, the Holy Spirit's moving and okay. But if you're crying every Sunday, stop mourning your faith, man.
And that's what I mean. Once in a while, it's fine, bro. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. But part of it too is this message that I seem to see a lot happening of the end is coming. Shut up, dude. You're depressing me. I don't like you very much. Shush it.
Well, you got to have some sermons about stuff, but like, I just don't. Again, it's just this whole thing about, you know, you end up going up there as the pastor and it's just emotion. And it's just emotion. Mm-hmm. And it's so emotional that you're crying and you do that repeatedly. That's going to push me away, right? I'm not going to be in favor of that, right?
Yeah.
But, and I mean, you got to think about this. I'll always turn to this verse because I think it's so critical. When iron sharpens iron, so shall men sharpen men.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And to think about it in that perspective of how that is not a pleasant thing. That is brutal. It can be, it's not quiet. There's action. Mm-hmm. It's loud and it's like, you know, intentional, and it does shave some stuff off. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's what men are. That's an illustration of kind of how men are meant to be molded.
1 Corinthians, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, but let all that you do be done in love. That if you were to ask me to kind of define what we should be within the church as men, that's a very good definition.
Yeah, there was a man, I guess this has been 10 years ago, maybe, Act Like Men conference. And this was their main verse that they used for the whole conference, was this particular one right here. Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. Yeah, this was it. And so everybody that got up to, they were guest speakers, used, you know, they were speaking on this, which was, it was really good. Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot, you could unpack this though, that we could sit here and talk about this verse, for like the whole time.
Yeah.
Stand firm in the faith.
Yes.
Let me just use that. Steadfast is another word you could use there for that statement, right? How else? There is nothing more manly than standing for your convictions, for your faith, for Christ, for your church. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really where it is. Don't you need to stand fast in that faith, period. And that's more manly than that you're going to find in a lot of places.
Well, you know, there's something here at the end, but the reason this strikes me is, you know, I think part of what we forget as men, and I got to spend time with my dad last weekend, which I really appreciated. And you know, I know how highly you thought of your father. A lot of what we do is to honor our fathers, right? Is to honor the men that poured into us.
All right.
But, you know, this last part, it says, Jesus didn't just die for church attendance. He died to raise up sons who would carry his mission. Dude, men of the church, you need to remember something. You are a brother of Christ. Your heavenly father is God himself. Stand up, straighten your spine, and act like you have that legacy to fulfill. And I don't think you'll have a problem. Remember who adopted you. Remember who accepted you as a child. Remember who said, despite the terribleness that is within you, despite the destruction that you wrought on a daily basis, despite the fact that most of you will deny me and a lot of you will never know me, you are my sons. And if you cry out to me, I will save you. And we've got to stop wearing our faith like an anchor. And we need to start anchoring to our faith.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
So many men in church, when I see the face, it's that face of, oh, the anchor of being a Christian. No, it shouldn't be an anchor at all. You should anchor to your faith. Your faith should not be an anchor to you, right? It should not be a weight that you have to drag with you. When my life is chaos, I anchor to my faith, right? That's the way it works. Right? That's God says, come to me, I will bring you peace.
Yep.
Right? He doesn't say everything's going to be easy. He doesn't say you're going to have everything you want. He never promises riches. He never promises, you know, fame. He just promises that he will bring you peace. You will know, if you know him, he will protect you. Right? And I think that's really, if we could just get back to that. Men, stop wearing your faith as an anchor and start anchoring to it instead. You would see a big boom in how men behave within the church. But we've got, oh, I've got my kids and my wife, and I get them good church. You don't have to go to church. This is going to be a very controversial thing to say out loud, Reggie. There's no requirement in the Bible for you to be at church every Sunday and Wednesday night. It is required that you commune with other people of God and live a faith-filled life. And yes, you want to go to church, but hey man, I would rather see a man who is beaten down take a break from church and gather himself and come back stronger than see a man who carries the weight of the world into church and allows the world to blind him from what he needs to be seeing inside those walls. And I think that's where the dividing line is. I don't think of my faith in God as an anchor or a weight to me. I think of it as the thing that keeps me grounded, right? It keeps me from being the wild animal that most of us men would be if we didn't have God, right? We are usurpers by nature. I love when you say that. We are usurpers by nature. Well, guess what? God keeps me from wanting to enact in those behaviors, right? Like he does. But anyway, we could talk about this for a long time because there's a lot of, like, I honestly, when I was reading this, I was like, man, this touches almost everything we've talked about for the last year and a half.
Right.
I was like, this is one of those absolute things where we could just run wild on this for 4 or 5 hours and probably still not get to the end of it.
Oh yeah, sure.
So anything else, man?
No, I mean, really we've covered the basics of it. I mean, it's just about, you know, men are important and you, it doesn't matter who you are and who your family is or whatever, you have a purpose. And it doesn't, it's up to you to kind of, you know, open your eyes and see what God's trying to point you to, but it, you know, be active.
Just, are you in the pew or are you in the mission? Dude, you need to be like a meme machine.
You need
to be a meme machine with all these lovely, like one-liners you come up with.
I know, man. It's a shame AI did it for me.
You had to ask the questions, right?
Well, I did do that, but yeah. Look, stand firm in your faith. Act like men.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. Anything else, Reg?
No, I don't want to get into anything else, to be honest, just because I'm kind of irritated by a lot of other things.
Anybody who's praying, pray for my boy because he's in the struggles right now and I'm praying for him. And it's just one of those things, man. But guys, I invite you to be honest about these things with yourself, and I invite you to just, you know, step back, especially men, step back and take a hard look at what you're doing. We're creatures of reason, you know, we're stoic creatures of reason. We should be able to look at behaviors and discern whether they're healthy or not. So I would encourage men who are having trouble within church to step back and look at, you know, even if you have to step back and look and say, hey, am I in the healthiest church? Is this the church I need to be in? Right.
Are there opportunities in the church that maybe you're not even, you just haven't,
or do you know that there's opportunities there and you've just allowed the misery of your current existence to keep you from taking advantage? Reach out, man, take advantage. You know, connect, dude. There's people there that want to connect to you. And I would just encourage you to, when you're in that church, you know, connect your family, connect yourself and make something happen.
Yep. We're on B Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.